Hi, everybody. My name is Damara West, and I'm founder of Be Well, Beautiful Woman, where we help women to center their healing and liberation so that they can lead and live lives on their own terms. I want to welcome you to the Women Who Write to Liberate Summit, which is comprised of 15 plus female writers and those that support the craft of writing to inspire women just like you to find their authentic voice and use it in ways they feel inspired to, including but not limited to writing a book. And today I have Michelle Hoard, author of The Other Side of Yet, with me. Let me tell you a little bit about Michelle. In 2022, award-winning producer, author, and media executive Michelle D. Hoard released her debut memoir, The Other Side of Yet, on Atria Books. Her story of resilience is the subject of the intensely personal testimony, which she shares in hopes that others can also find courage and strength on the other side of their own personal yets. She has been featured in O Magazine, on The Tamron Hall Show, by Good Morning America's Robin Roberts, and has shared her journey with audiences across the country. Hoard is also the founder of Gabrielle's Wings, a nonprofit she created to honor her daughter, Gabrielle Eileen, who was murdered by her father when she was just 7. Determined to ensure her daughter's legacy will be focused on helping children and not on how she died, Gabrielle's Wings is dedicated to giving children of color in vulnerable communities the tools they need to soar above their circumstances and embodies every mother's dreams for her child to grow and thrive without limitations. Hoard has 3 decades of creative and executive experience at organizations and shows like NBC Universal, Good Morning America, The Oprah Winfrey Show, and she is also a proud alumni of Howard University and a member of AKA Sorority, Inc. She lives in Connecticut with her husband, Axel. Michelle, thank you so much for saying yes to this opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here with you.
Yes, yes. So we're going to dive right in. And the first thing that I want to explore with you is the moment that you knew for sure that you needed to write The Other Side of Yet.
Well, I'm going to amend a little bit, if you'll forgive me the question, and say that I've written my whole life. I had never written a book before. Writing a book was always my dream. Writing a book about your child's murder obviously is not something anyone would ever hope to write or wish to write. And so for me, and I think it speaks so well to the idea of women and writing and liberation, I wrote this at first for me. It was not something to be published. The book is comprised of poems and journals where I was really just grappling with this unimaginable thing that had happened in my life. And as I journaled day by day and sometimes shared those journal entries with friends at the suggestion of my therapist, I would hear testimonies from girlfriends of, wow, this really lifted me up today. I'm not going through what you're going through, but I'm going through a divorce, or I was just diagnosed with cancer. So all of those intersections in life that are unexpected and a lot of times unwanted that require us to rethink our lives. So after really praying about it and seeing how those journal entries were becoming testimony, I decided that I should put it together with a book and really try to create a blueprint that people could follow who are facing tremendous loss and crossroads in their lives.
Yeah. And what a beautiful blueprint that it is. I have had the honor of reading the book, and there are so many essential elements just about living life fully and about embracing what is, and from things around forgiveness to being present in the moment. And so thank you for gifting us with The Other Side of Yet, because it truly has been one of the transformative reads of my lifetime. And mm-hmm. I imagine that that is the case for so many already and so many to come.
Oh, thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Of course, of course. So recognizing that you have always been a writer, as you have shared with us, How has the written and spoken word helped to heal you? And I know you talk about this, you know, fully in your book, but I imagine, considering that you've been a writer for, you know, your whole life, that there's lots of themes of healing that are captured through your writing.
Well, I was a shy child, and so writing at times was used creatively to illustrate things I saw around me in poetry. It was used a lot of times. I'm so grateful we did not have social media or any of this stuff when I was a kid, because Lord knows what I would have posted. But back in the day, we would put something on paper. Whether it was a young teen heart being broken, or, you know, any of the things that we encounter in life, I would at times write a letter to someone that I knew they would never receive, and found that there could be catharsis just in getting it out. And again, because I was less of an extrovert and more of an introvert, less likely to go to someone and say something to their face, I found that the ability to get it out of my body and onto paper, one, allowed me to analyze it, decide, do I really need to say this to somebody else, or is this for me? What do I want out of this experience? Am I expecting something from the other person? Or again, is it just for my own examination? So I think, and I encourage young people all the time, even if you don't think of yourself as a writer, right, that journaling, a diary, even speaking into your phone, into notes, sometimes our ability in moments of passion, and that can be frustration, anger, excitement, just to get it out of your body, lets you examine it. You don't hold it. So many women, especially women of color, hold on tight to this superwoman, you know, Rock of Gibraltar persona, and we get sick. And we eat our feelings and we don't take care of ourselves. And so for me, thinking of writing as liberation is also, and really starts at base camp, of how do we express ourselves to ourselves first? And then from there, decide how we use how we're feeling to grow and heal.
Yeah. You know, I really appreciate you connecting writing to liberation for folks who are listening that, you know, maybe their aspiration isn't to write a book, right? That's not their starting point. But I love this invitation to get it out, right? Because so much of how we matriculate through life, we hold on to. So much of our lived experiences, we hold on to. And, you know, when I think about women and what falls on our shoulders, you know, it's so much, right? We're carrying the weight of our partners. We're carrying the weight of our families. We're often carrying the weight of our communities, right? And serving our communities in really plentiful ways. And so this question around, like, how well are you, right? How are you expressing your wellness? How is your heart? And, you know, just getting it on paper is the safest thing that we can do before we have the courage ever. And maybe that's not what we're led to do, right? But if we are led to express it, and we get to the point of healing so that we can express it, right? Mm-hmm. What a gift. But I love that you said me first, right? Mm-hmm. Me first in that. And that is truly what wellness is about, right? Pouring our own cup first so that we can heal the world in the ways in which Source, Universe, God is calling us to. So that's a real gift to think about writing as a healing outlet. I know that this is not necessarily, you know, groundbreaking, and yet for many people it is, right? Because, you know, we can know something but not be practicing it. And until we practice it, we can't really benefit from it.
Well, I had this experience, as mothers often do, where, you know, through the mouths of babes, right? I was on a flight with Gabrielle when she was about 4, and I'm working, and I'm in Jack and Jill, and cookie mom for girls, you know, doing all the things, right? Doing the most, as the kids say. Yeah. And we're on this flight, and she's patiently and attentively listening to the flight instructions, and says, "Mommy, why would they tell you to put your mask on before mine?" And I had to sit back for a minute and I explained to her, well, mommy, if mommy isn't safe, she can't make you safe. you know, and then we would both be unsafe. Mm-hmm. And again, so obvious, anyone that's been on a plane, even if you haven't, have heard that, you know, put your oxygen mask on first line. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I realized how powerful it was and that it was about more than safety on an airplane, right? Mm-hmm. And how important it is. And there would be times in her short life where things would come up and maybe mommy was hanging out with the girls or getting her nails done, where I would say, well, you know what? Mommy has to put her oxygen mask on first. Yes. And so I think when we think of liberation, when we think of healing, no one is coming to save us, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. If you believe in a higher source and in God, certainly God, whoever you serve, is here to offer you a path to freedom. And on this earth, in this earth, among humans, there is not a human riding in on a white horse to save you. Yeah. You are to save yourself. Mm. And I think with the complexities of life, all of the things you so articulately mentioned that we're involved in for others to try to save and heal others, we forget about our own healing.
Yes.
And yeah. So learning how to mother ourselves, learning how to heal ourselves, and using our words and our story as a tool is really powerful.
Yeah. And, you know, before we get into the next question, I just want to back what you're saying up, and particularly with people who are using their light to heal others, to help mm-hmm. others. And I think that oftentimes if we're in that healing light space, we don't necessarily think that we need to also be practicing that healing mm-hmm. for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I find that, you know, I mean, I teach yoga, I do a lot of things in the wellness space, but teaching yoga is not the same thing as me showing up on my mat and practicing mm-hmm. alone, right? Mm-hmm. It's not the same because I have to hold space only for myself in that space, which allows me to connect with myself in a way that the yoga practice alone as the teacher isn't going to provide the pathway for. And so what you're saying is so powerful. And although, again, you know, we know this, right? We do. We know this on some level. And yet we shortchange ourselves often from having the flow of liberation, because the only way we get to the flow of liberation is through the flow of practice. And so I love what you have invited us to think about when it comes to really taking that space and putting that oxygen mask on, as you have so beautifully articulated. So, you know, there's so many of us who have experienced a world-shattering loss such as yours, and they don't necessarily see a way forward, which is causing them immense prolonged suffering. So talk to us a little bit about how you found your way and how you keep finding your way towards liberation.
You know, I think what's most important for people who are on any sort of healing journey to understand is that it is an evolving, ever-flowing thing. For me, at least, I don't believe there is now it's over. One of my favorite illustrations that you often see online is seeing grief as a ball. And, you know, the idea that the ball shrinks over time, when in reality, what happens is the container, you, your heart, your spirit, grow. The ball doesn't shrink. It doesn't go away, but you somehow learn how to incorporate it into your life. And so I think for me, I know there are stages of grief that people reference, the five stages of grief. Fun fact about those five stages of grief: the doctor who originally put them together was putting them together for people who were dying, not for those of us who are left after. And so we have turned that around into steps that we're supposed to take. And unlike those souls who are moving on to, you know, another space, we're still here. And so for our lives, we have to understand that loss and learning from loss and grieving and rebuilding is not a linear process. It is not a, you know, beginning, middle, and end process. And I think that is one of the fundamental things to accept, that certainly over time, your ability to live with certain losses changes, evolves. Perhaps you're not crying every day. Perhaps you're not even crying every week or every month. Mm-hmm. But there are things that can trigger it. Yeah. And giving yourself the grace and space in those moments to say, I'm not retreating. I'm not going back. This is a moment. This is a day. I have the right. To me, liberty is the right, right? And that's the right to feel how I feel in this moment and not name it. Yeah. Not name it and label it as any sort of stage or any sort of limitation or have any judgment around it. Yeah. And so for me in my healing journey, you know, it has been almost 6 years since my daughter was murdered. There certainly is not a moment of the day that goes by where I'm not thinking about her. And at the same time, through, I believe, my faith, God's grace, a community, and some of the things that I write about in the book as a blueprint, I have found a way to keep going, to be in motion, to move forward. And that doesn't mean that the grief doesn't meet me up the road sometimes when I don't expect it, but that I've committed to continue to move and move forward. And I think that for a lot of people is so powerful to hear. Sometimes we stay in place, whether it's not writing or not moving, until we feel like we understand it. We get it. We know what we need to say. Just write. Yeah. Just walk. Mm-hmm. Don't wait for the moment. Don't talk about writer's block. Just get it out of your body. Just have the motion. And through that motion, in writing, in words, in yoga, and all the wellness ways that we can take care of ourselves, that's where the liberation lies. There's no grand answer. It's continuing to be brave enough to just move.
Yeah. Well, and what you've described is really based in somatics, right? Like the reason why somatics is so powerful is because of the movement, right? So even just the movement of writing something helps us to retain it, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're activating different parts of ourselves. And I really appreciate how you described grief and just in general, that if we're talking about well-being and grief is a part of that, that mm-hmm. there is no real arrival. And so if we have an expectation and we're approaching our life with, you know, I had a friend once say, well, when am I going to heal? And I said, mm-hmm. when you do. And even mm-hmm. when you do, there's going to be more, right? Because healing and grief is like an onion. And there are going to be moments that, as you said, you know, for your daughter and the depth of what she meant to you, she's with you all the time, right? She's moving forward with you in life. And what her spirit is moving forward with you in life. And I think sometimes people get stuck in, well, gosh, if I move forward, then I'm leaving this person, this spirit, the essence of them behind. And what you just offered to us is that, gosh, you know, there's not a waking moment that my daughter's not in my head. And yet I'm choosing over and over and over again to take action, to say yes to life, to say yes to what is, and to make the most of what is. And I think that's really, really beautiful and a simple way for us to engage in the acceptance, because the acceptance allows the room that we need to be able to allow newness to come in and not, of course, leaving that person or that thing behind, but just moving forward with them in a different way. And I think that's a really different way to think about grief. And even, you know, I'm a licensed therapist, but I haven't heard anyone articulate it quite that way. So that was really, really powerful, Michelle.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, make no mistake, it is a daily struggle. Right. It is. I'll share. Gabrielle gave me, and I talk about it in the book, a plant that was a little, you know, bit of dirt with a seed planted in it on Mother's Day that all the kids gave their parents on Mother's Day. And I lost her 3 weeks later. So a little sprout had barely popped out by the time I lost her. And that plant grew and grew and grew, wound up being a pepper plant, wound up being an incredibly beautiful, fruitful plant. And I'm now remarried. And my husband said to me gently last year, you know, at some point the plant is going to die. You know, there's a life cycle even to plants, no matter how well you take care of it. And I didn't want to hear it. And so he smartly started taking the seeds from the plant, from the fruit of the plant, and giving it to people so they could plant them themselves. And yesterday, because you know, it's winter and I wasn't sure what was happening with the plant. And unbeknownst to me, he had put some of the seeds in the pot with the original plant. The plant isn't alive anymore. And he took it to a nursery yesterday and they confirmed it. And I was devastated because here was this living thing, one of the last things that my daughter gave me that was now gone, that I had been a caretaker of, right? And it doesn't matter the logic or the science, but that it was gone. And at the same time, and this is where I think life is such a more of a flow than linear, I have this stark bare plant now that has two little sprouts that are coming out from that same soil. And I have friends that are sending me pictures as I was sharing this yesterday of their plants that are growing. And so I think even in our pain, in our grief, if we find ways to plant those seeds of hope and of faith and of love in ourselves, in healthy behaviors and healthy people around us, it will grow. It mm-hmm. will grow, and it may not look like it did, but that love is still so very much there. And so that is a very in real time piece that I've struggled with over the last 24 hours. But also, as I look at what once was, I can see what's coming as well.
Wow. I felt that. And what a gift that your husband knew, right? He knew. And the fact that you got to witness the magnifying effect of your baby's spirit. I mean, wow. And see, these moments that we can't conceptualize for ourselves. And yeah. yet God, universe, source knows mm-hmm. all. And thank you for sharing such a recent moment of how you're encountering the stages of grief, right? And wow, so beautiful. And I hope I get to see a picture of that plant.
I promise.
Okay, thank you. All right, so in the other side of yet, in alignment with what we just talked about, you discuss in great detail the synchronicities of life and how the universe, God source, is always speaking to us. So what more can we do to tap into this truth?
You know, whether you think about prayer or meditation or yoga or writing, I think any practice that requires you to quiet your mind, quiet your body, and to really focus inward and with prayer, perhaps upward, and block out the noise around you, it's amazing what you can discover about your body, about your spirit, about what the Holy Spirit or nature may be telling you, or what Mother Nature tells you. There have been times when I've sat outside and have been thinking about something and have just been completely alone with my thoughts, and something like a gentle breeze coming along in that moment, or a cardinal flying by in that moment, take on completely different meaning because I feel connected to the world outside of myself. So I would invite people, again, you know, we all heal differently. We all have different sources where we find peace, if that's the ocean, if that's the mountains. But, you know, I think it's so important to have your alone quiet time in your body, in your heart, out of your head, and in nature, if you can, to really be able to listen to those voices, to that affirmation. And a lot of times when we're stuck, it's because we're so busy trying to think and game the next thing instead of quieting ourselves to listen for what the next thing should be.
Yeah. You know, this is so important because a lot of times we approach life by searching, right? And thinking we can just act more, right? If we just worked harder, if we just sat with this question enough times, if we just searched long enough, we'll find it. And yet the searching is in the present. And, you know, some of us call it, you know, higher consciousness, essentially, right? And how God, universe, source is using this world that we live in to speak to us, to get us to our highest and most optimal self. And so when people, you know, say, oh, you know, that wellness stuff, it's not, no, it's everything. It's your baseline. It's your foundation. And yes, you can rigor your way through life, which oftentimes is mired by suffering, or you can be present with life while moving with inspired action in relationship to that presence. And so what you just said just shaped that so well. So, yeah. So as we get ready to wrap up, Michelle, you know, you have 3 decades of creative experience. And what can you tell us about what you've learned to continuously tap into this unlimited reservoir, right? I imagine that there's nothing in your work that doesn't have a creative element to it. So how do you keep that creativity flowing?
You know, I think that in any discipline, practicing your discipline, if you were to say you're a yoga instructor, but you don't have your own practice, you're not learning. You're not learning about new techniques or different ways of doing things, or perhaps participating in seminars that are conducted by other professionals or practitioners. It's hard to evolve, right? And so I think creativity in the same way can't be static. I also learned in my career, which, as you mentioned earlier, has spanned from literally writing for shows to being in boardrooms and presenting PowerPoints. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of us should limit ourselves. We all have creativity in us. We all have the ability to be creative. You can be creative about spreadsheets. You can be any accountant that's ever balanced a budget has had to be creative if they do it professionally or they're doing it for a household. So I think owning our individual creativity, where it shows up for us, and then challenging ourselves in different ways to be inspired. Maybe it's a movie you wouldn't normally see, or an art exhibition, or listening to, you know, a TED talk, or watching something that you do with, you know, this series that you're doing with the webinars. I think hearing from others, soaking in inspiration in all of the various forms can help build those creative muscles and inspire you. And that certainly is what I try to do.
Yeah. Well, and this is why, right, investing in our personal development is so essential. And not only does it allow us to be authentically aligned to the very things that we espouse, as you said, but it also helps us to evolve also as what you said, right? And so if we're not pouring in, we're stagnating. Right? Like that's, you know, that's the opposite of evolution. And so, you know, being able to do that on a regular basis is certainly connected to our liberation. And so as we get ready to wrap up, and before we let folks know how they can stay in touch with you and how they can purchase The Other Side of Yet, I would just love to explore just a final piece of inspiration that you have for the audience about using the power of their authentic voice.
Yes, you alone in the universe have been given your experiences, your surroundings, your life story. No one else can tell your story but you. You are uniquely positioned through your experiences, through your trauma, through your triumph, through the love you have in your life to share. And so no one has the market cornered on that. Don't be intimidated. Don't lessen yourself. Don't make yourself small in comparison or compare at all to others and their stories. You have a testimony. And so own the fact that you have your own unique testimony, and own and understand the fact that your testimony may be the thing that someone else needs to help them heal.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. You know, I love this because I think that oftentimes when we say things like, oh, the market is saturated and, you know, what can I offer? Because there's X number of people out there. And, you know, what you're offering is something that I say often is that no one can do what you do the way that you're going to do it. And however you do it, there are people waiting on just you. Just you and how you will show up authentically in that space. So what a great way to end us. And let folks know how they can stay in touch with you, Queen.
Yes, yes. Please follow me on Instagram at MD Hord. That's H-O-R-D. And The Other Side of Yet, my book is available anywhere books are sold. I'm a big proponent of independent bookshops. You can look at bookshop.org to find an independent bookstore near you. All the traditional ways, Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, that you purchase books. So I hope you will buy it and read it and embrace it. And this month we have the paperback coming out, which will also include a reader's guide. So I'm excited about the fact that book clubs will also now have a way to connect and share with each other through this reader's guide.
Oh my gosh, this is going to be so huge. Michelle, you have given us pure life today. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for just being you and for delivering this expansive story to the world. You heard it here at the Women Who Write to Liberate Summit. There is a link where you can access this book. The paperback is coming, which is something to really celebrate about. And make sure that if you have a book club, that you bring this into your book club. I promise you, and I'm saying that from my own words, from reading this just powerful, and that I feel like doesn't even really embody it to, you know, in its totality. But it will be one of those books that will transform you. Maybe not to the level that it did me, because you have your own individual story. But again, you heard it here at the Women Who Write to Liberate Summit. So excited to be with you all. Make sure that you follow Michelle. Make sure you purchase her book. And until next time, beauties, Ashe.